Welcome back to another week in the world of Angel Insights, brought to you by Syndicate Room. This is the podcast that takes you inside the world of some of the best up-and-coming angels to reveal their tips, tactics, and strategies when it comes to investing in today's hottest startups. And I'm thrilled to welcome Henry Joseph Grant to the show today. Now, what an entrepreneurial journey Henry has, having started his career at 11 as a paperboy, and then working at the likes of Virgin, Just Eat, where he worked from the very early stages to their Series D, to where he is today with UniDays. And alongside this operational expertise, Henry is an angel specializing in providing strategic commercial value to startups. And if you'd like the transcript from the show today, then you can head over to syndicateroom.com, where you can find it under the Learning Academy. But now it's time to head into the show, so I'm delighted to welcome Henry Joseph Grant to the hot seat. But Henry, a huge welcome to Angel Insights. It's such a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Harry. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, I want to start with a bit about you and how you made your way into the world of tech, how the Just Eat job came about, and then where you are now.
Okay, fantastic. So I'm going to start from the beginning. I'm certainly not new to tech. I've been using computers since the BBC Micro and Acorn Archimedes, and I've been surfing the web since 95. So I've been around a long time, as you can imagine, and I've always been an early adopter, embraced and gravitated towards new and innovative technology. In my studies, I almost studied computer science, but instead opted for business as I was very entrepreneurial from a young age, which explains why I'm pretty awesome commercially, but pretty lousy at Java. But I'm working on that.
So am I, don't worry.
Aren't we all? I think I made the wrong option with how hard it is to get good tech guys these days. So I should have maybe gone the other way. My first job was at 11, and that started quite interestingly. I lied about my age and I got a paper round. And then took all the actual newsagent's paper rounds to myself. And then actually decided I wasn't getting paid well enough for the work I was doing. Again, I lied about my age. There's a bit of a pattern here, but I've stopped doing it now these days. But
always reassuring to see the trend dies out, doesn't it?
Absolutely. So I made up a national insurance number and got an evening telesales job selling windows after school, and didn't tell my mum, obviously, and which is where I discovered my natural sales ability, becoming the number one sales boy in the country. My voice hadn't broken at the time, so I think that was maybe a selling point.
I have to ask there, what did you learn about that hard sell? I mean, it's probably one of the hardest sales jobs you could have.
Absolutely. So there's no frills to it. So you need to really focus on how you can actually listen to people, what people want, really. You know, people who ring up about windows or anything like that have a very hard time in convincing somebody very quickly that they need to listen to them. So my tactic from the beginning was to actually let people speak and work out if they actually needed you. And if they did, then it's a bit of a no-brainer to get it arranged for them, really.
And so that was your first role in sales?
Yeah, at a very young age. And as I say, I was a top salesperson. It wasn't actually legal, me being there. But
who cares? You took the paper round, so that didn't stop you.
Well, exactly, yeah. And so then I basically was a heavy hitter in various other sales roles. And, you know, sales has been my foundation to my career. One of which was working for 3.5 years with Virgin. And then I spent a year in recruitment. So basically, all of my jobs up to that point had basically taught me two major things. And that was how to identify what people wanted, and then how to influence them that they needed to get that from me. Moving forward to the sort of nearer time, you asked about Just Eat. In 2008, I could see that the recession was looming, and I realized that recruitment was not a good industry to be during a recession.
Absolutely, yeah. It's very poignant.
So I tried to jump ship to one that was and would weather the storm. And whilst I was listing vacancies on Gumtree, I came across the Just Eat job. I actually researched very briefly their history in Denmark, because there wasn't actually a huge amount of history in the UK to go on. And I tried to identify, one, if takeaway would grow during a recession, and two, was it too early, you know, for the market?
Can I ask, at that stage, how big would Just Eat? Was it, you know, 10-man, 100-man style?
Nowhere near that. So I was there was a handful of people in the UK.
Okay.
And, you know, basically the team was very, very small. David Butrus, the current CEO, was actually very hands-on. Mm-hmm. And the conclusion I came to when I looked at the role and research was that it would be actually less likely that people would actually dine out in a restaurant during a recession. But of course, they'd still need to eat. So a £10 pizza at home suddenly becomes an affordable luxury, and, you know, people will still have to eat. So I knew that Just Eat would be a good one. And I felt the recession was the perfect storm for Just Eat to be huge. So I called them up and I spoke to David at Just Eat, and he said that he had a recruiter lined up with plenty of people that was actually going to come and see him for the job. And if I did actually want to get an interview, I'd have to travel down to London to be interviewed at the same time. I said no, that if he wanted me and I'm the best person for the job, and to also avoid paying a recruiter's fee for hiring somebody, he would have to travel up to the Midlands. So he did. And the interview was great. And he said he would need to arrange a stage two interview with the founder of Just Eat, Jesper Buch. And 20 minutes after the interview, he actually called me and said there was no need for a stage two. The job was mine. So, yeah, it's no secret that my time at Just Eat was very successful. And I'm absolutely proud of the company we built.
And then moving to today, where are you at today?
Yeah, sure. So nowadays, I'm doing quite a lot. I'm operationally working at several startups. Unidays is one of those. And I'm also mentoring with Seedcamp and PyLabs. And I'm sure many people on the podcast will know them. And I've got various angel investments globally. And I've just co-founded a project in Northern Ireland called Peace Tech.
Now, I have to admit, I've got a pun here for you that I'm just dying to get out. And it's the next question. So you touched upon Just Eat there, obviously. And I have to ask, from that and seeing the hyper growth of such a phenomenal company, what were the biggest takeaways of watching Just Eat scale into hyper growth mode for you?
I wish I had a klaxon for that. I like the takeaway from Harry.
I get a little brownie point for that one.
Yeah, absolutely. It was very imaginative. So I was with Just Eat from the very, very early stages of startup in the UK through to Series D and just shortly before the IPO, actually. So I've got so many learnings that I could give you. I'd be here all night. But I'm actually just going to give you two to really sort of cover what I majorly learned there. And number one is that people at one stage are not always going to be the right people to take you to other stages of scale. You really have to understand how damaging it can be to keep the wrong people too long or lose the right people too soon. So you have to make difficult decisions confidently and quickly.
Do you agree with hire fast, fire fast? Or do you think that's potentially wrong? You should take time in hiring, but be quick to dispose.
You need to understand the strengths and weaknesses of the people. So it may well be that they could actually fit elsewhere in the business. And, you know, of course, if they've been in a leadership role, that's quite difficult in terms of, pride, etc., to do that. But obviously, if they are going to have a use elsewhere, at least give them that option before actually disengaging them and getting rid of them, basically. The learning there is obviously, you know, if you can keep people, do it. But we learned a lot through the time of Just Eat where, you know, the major factor was we kept some people too long and they wasn't right.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the second factor there.
Yeah, so number two, quick execution and outmaneuvering competitors is vital. So Just Eat in the early days was very low tech, and the barriers of replication of which were very low. And the barriers to make it work were extremely high. There's a new industry, and as ultimately all marketplaces are, they're all dictated by liquidity of supply and demand. And obviously with getting demand in a business like Just Eat, you need to move very, very quickly. And to win, you need a kick-ass team who can move faster and smarter than anyone else.
I'm intrigued then to hear how you think of the takeaway and delivery market now in today's economy with the likes of Deliveroo and on-demand food delivery startups.
Oh, now you're asking. Deliveroo, I'm a big fan of. They are great. Obviously, a lot smaller than Just Eat in terms of actually number of orders. And I don't really see them as a competitor, actually. They're actually operating maybe at the premium end of the market in terms of name brand restaurant chains that don't traditionally deliver. Not a lot of people know, but Just Eat actually had a service called Just Delivery in Denmark before we actually came to the UK. So we realized that the scale of a logistic heavy business is very expensive, and we knew what we was good at. And obviously you can build things onto a business as you go along, but if you do too much at the start, then it can really cause problems. So Deliveroo, yeah, it came at the right time. They've done really well. I really rate Wilshire highly. And I'm really impressed with the progress they've made. In terms of the portal market, I believe Just Eat is second to none. You know, the delivery heroes of this world are nowhere near as intelligent as a business as Just Eat.
So I want to discuss then your angel investing. We should do it. It's an angel investing show, so I feel it's time. So talk to me, when did you first start angel investing? And what was the real impetus behind this decision for you?
Sure. So I had a great journey at Just Eat, and I seen what was actually possible with a great team. So my first angel investment was immediately after leaving Just Eat. And I've always had the ability to spot opportunity very early and create symbiotic relationships and partnerships with people. And I actually, you know, was emerged in the tech scene, and I actually met a lot of great people, and the opportunity emerged.
You said about partnering with people there. I'm intrigued. What do you look for in a potential partner?
It's a bit of a cliche. I mean, I've heard it on the show before, but where I can add value. So I'd identified the pattern, and in a lot of cases, it's still true that founding teams are great in terms of engineering and product skills, but not so great in terms of commercial skills. So that's really my core strength. So I believed I could add huge value get in early enough, and ideally before it was investable, meaning I'd get enough equity and to make it interesting for myself. And it was at a low enough valuation to ensure I could afford to invest.
And when you look at your investing style then, and comparing it to the ecosystem of investors that we have now, how does it compare?
So I don't really look at what anyone else is doing, but I'm aware of the super angels of this world, etc. And I've actually worked with a few of those in London, and two of the most active actually. And I don't really agree with their style. They take too much equity early. De-incentivize their founders further by treating them like employees and micromanaging them. So I don't really want to go into too much detail about my own strategy, but what I will give is some context. I initially try and mitigate my risk as much as possible and get in fast and get out fast as well, maybe Series A or Series B preferably.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And you said that obviously before they're investable. What metrics do you have to go on then at these very early stages? What threads of potential do you hone in on?
Sure. So to mitigate risk before I would even consider investing, I ensure that I've already got a good idea that their market and potential market is big enough. And then I will reach out and create a relationship with them to confirm that they have a good model and they're great guys. And then I'll be looking to identify the management team possesses the four pillars of my own success. And they are determination, flexibility, imagination, and disruptiveness. Mm-hmm. If I see that, then, you know, investing's a no-brainer because they'll get momentum, especially with my help.
I'm really intrigued. You said about the size of the market there. And as angels, we differ in terms of market requirements size-wise to VCs. You know, VCs need billion-dollar outcomes that potentially could return the fund. For us, it's not so much the case. Obviously, yes, we do want that too. But how do you approach market size then? What is big enough for you?
I think it's varies from angel to angel, but my style is very different. I had less money, I take less equity, add much more value, and most importantly, I'm strategic, not selfish or greedy. So I feel the market at the moment is very much in the favor of good entrepreneurs, so that it's very competitive for, you know, to get investments in the best opportunities, especially with the likes of SEIS, EIS, and alternative finance, not to mention the great platforms such as Seedcamp and PyLabs. I believe it's a perfect storm for brilliant entrepreneurs to take a competitive landscape to their investment round, with the aim to bring on board the best investors who add the most value. So for myself, really, it's just as important for me to make it important to them why and compelling why they should actually let me invest in them. And, you know, really, I feel the best investors start initially as a mentor, maybe an advisor, and an investment is a natural byproduct of that.
Mm-hmm. Have you had any founder resistance when you've suggested investing or following your advice?
To be honest, it's the other way around. They really want me on board, and you know, anything they can do to tie me on to the actual roadmap is perfect for them. Mm-hmm. I'm really conscious of bandwidth, so really I don't want to overpromise, underdeliver in terms of what I can offer them. And I really need to make sure that, you know, I can actually add value, really. You know, even if it's a great deal and I don't feel that I'm going to add much value, then it's pointless to me invest in.
And where do you find founders most need to add value? Where are they lacking, whether it be, I don't know, business models or growth, or what's it for you?
So I think, again, we touched on it a moment ago. I believe it's really around commercials and commercial ability and scaling the business. You know, 9 times out of 10, I meet a new entrepreneur and they're great. You know, they've got a brilliant product. You know, they're really passionate guys. But actually going out there and being able to navigate that and make the deals they need to make to sustain growth, and then also be aware of unit economics, etc., you know, alongside that, is very hard for, you know, them to have at a young age, especially a lot of the entrepreneurs are quite young. So not everybody comes from an investment background or banking, etc. So, you know, the very tech oriented founders, which is most of them, are very, you know, strong on the product, on the development, on the engineering, but in terms of commercial ability, very weak.
With young and first-time founders, how do you broach the sometimes difficult bridge of professional relationship as an angel investor and then relationship as a friend? Are you both? Do you agree with the segregation of the two?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, obviously, if I'm investing on my own back, then, you know, it's case by case. There is some founders that I work with very closely, some as a mentor even, that I get on really, really well with. But I believe I'm a little bit old fashioned in the sense that I think even though you're not on roll call, you should act like it. And, you know, you really should be conscious of your reputation. So I wouldn't really, you know, go out partying and raving with the founders. But we may have a quiet craft beer in Shoreditch or something like that.
Okay, fantastic. And then on the flip side, I'm sure you've had some companies not go so well as Just Eat. It is rather a rocket ship to have. So what were the takeaways then for you from those investments that haven't worked out? And how have you then altered your investment decision-making process?
In all honesty, of course I've had mistakes. If I hadn't, I'm sure I'd be working for an investor right now with 100% ratio. But, you know, the mistakes actually teach you a lot about what you should and shouldn't do. What I've learned is to stick to areas that you understand. Of course, you can take a punt, and if it goes wrong, don't dwell on it. You know, pick your sort of tears up and get back on with your life. But basically, the learning being is don't put all your eggs in one basket. If one breaks, then you have plenty of others to actually take you forwards.
Absolutely. And I'd love to dive into a quick fire round with you now, where I say a short statement and you give me your immediate thoughts.
Sure. Okay.
So your favorite investing resources, what are the places you always go to?
Crunchbase and Companies House Beta.
Mm-hmm. And the sector you're most excited by and why?
Fintech.
Why fintech?
Because I think it's going to revolutionise in the next few years, and I really feel that the UK especially is at the forefront of that, and that's why it excites me. I mean, don't get me wrong, you know, the likes of drones and, you know, AI and everything else is really exciting, but in terms of what I understand and what can scale here in the UK, it's really fintech for me.
Blog or newsletter of your choice, what are your must-reads there?
I'm going to give you the normal one here, TechCrunch. And that's really because I'm a big fan of Steve O'Hare and Mike Butcher.
Yeah, absolutely. Brilliant guys. And then angel investing is challenging, but what's the most challenging element of being an angel for you?
Good question. So I think, again, it's bandwidth. My strategy is really centered around relationships. So there's only so much you can take on board. And, you know, if you take on too much, you can essentially burn out. Now, I've never burnt out in my career. I'm a bit of a robot. But I want to basically be effective and actually give a lot of value to the entrepreneurs. And I really feel that most entrepreneurs need help to commercialize, as I said before. So the experience that I've got enabling them to focus on simultaneous things such as growth and unit economics is great. And I feel that, you know, the attention to detail that, you know, that requires for you to assist them with takes a bit of time, really. So, you know, in a world that we're becoming more and more data-driven and attribute-based, it's really important to have the time to actually delve deep. And I know a lot of other angels. I mean, I've heard Russ Shoren here before from Tech London Advocates. He's quite hands-off. And, you know, with three exits behind me, probably I'll be the same. But at the moment, I'm...
it's a nice position to be in.
Exactly. I'm a little bit more hand-to-mouth, so I like to give it a lot of time. So, yeah, just really bandwidth.
And then finally, last question, your most recent investment and why you said yes.
Okay, so it's just about to happen. So you're getting an exclusive here.
How exciting.
That's Splittable. I don't know if you know Nick Katz.
Yeah, it was on Product Hunt. Did really well.
Exactly, yeah. So I actually met Nick through Seedcamp as a mentor, and I mentored Nick and the team through Seedcamp, obviously. And ever since, I've been working with them very closely, and they are growing exponentially, and it's really impressive. For me, I can now see them branching out to innovate in payments, and also they will revolutionize household expenses and how people live together. And they appreciate the value I add, and I believe Nick and his team are kick-ass.
Well, Henry, thank you so much for coming on the show today. It really has been an absolute pleasure chatting with you, and I'm so grateful.
Thank you, Harry. The pleasure's all mine.
Absolutely fantastic to have Henry on the show there and hear his incredible takeaways from Just Eat and then how he's applied that to his strategy, angel investing. And if you'd like the transcript from the show today, then head over to syndicateroom.com where you can find the transcript under Learning Academy. Likewise, you can follow us on Twitter at syndicateroom. Thank you so much, as always, for your continued support. We really do appreciate it. Before we leave, we do have to say, if you are going to make an angel investment, please ensure that you do the proper due diligence prior to making the investment. Thank you so much, as always. Really appreciate it.